Hey friends, it is day three of .NET Conf. I've got my friend Kathleen Dollard with me today. How's it going?
I am so excited to be here. You and I have known each other for like 10 years and we have never co-presented. I've been on panels, but that's it. We have never co-presented. So
All right. This
is a fantastic, fun opportunity. I'm really looking forward to it.
It's a great opportunity here on day three. This is beginner day. I've been talking about it all week because I'm really excited about getting beginners excited about .NET. We've got two tracks today, okay? We've got .NET Fundamentals. That's this track right here. And then the other track that you can check out if you want to switch channels, and I won't feel bad, is Learn Web and Mobile. And that one's got ASP.NET Core, you got web APIs, there'll be Xamarin Forms, there'll be some great IoT stuff. But in this track here, we're going to have 2 hours with a little break with Kathleen and I talking about getting started with .NET from a very basic perspective, right? We're assuming you're a beginner, you understand maybe your file system.
Yeah, hopefully you have an understanding of the file system and you can get into a command prompt, hopefully. Those are things you could look up if you're on the tape. And then you could also be able to know a little bit about how code works, maybe what a class is, maybe what a for loop is, and that should do it.
Cool.
We'll be taking it from there.
Yep. So I've got a Windows machine, and the first hour I'll spend that time on the Windows machine. I'll use Notepad and the command prompt. It'll be a little command prompt heavy, but don't freak out, because in the second hour we'll switch over to a Mac, for those of you who maybe have a Mac or Ubuntu, and we'll see Visual Studio Code, we'll see Visual Studio proper.
That's right.
Okay. Well, then after this, we'll have Bill Wagner, who's going to do 2 hours just on the language. So we're really separating what happens at the command line and the tooling with the language, which is your expertise.
Right. So what we're hoping to do is by the time you understand, you're getting ready to learn the language, you'll have an idea of why it is you're writing that code in the first place. So for the first 2 hours, we're going to give you a little bit of context on what an application actually looks like inside of .NET, and we'll be then on it with Bill, you'll be able to see how to actually write more complex code and things that'll actually do something interesting.
Mm-hmm. We've got 2 hours of C#, and we also have some great F# language classes. We're going to see both F# and getting started with F# and .NET Core, and then also a great web application framework called Fable. So F# is a functional language. It's another language in the family of .NET languages that you can check out. So you'll be able to experience different languages today, all within the scope of day three of .NET Conf. All right, so it's somewhat scripted, but it's very likely that we'll make some mistakes.
Definitely.
I will make mistakes, and you'll call me out on them, and vice versa.
Well, yeah, hopefully we'll have a little bit of interaction here, and so we have some idea where we're going, but scripted might be a big word for this. We'll have a lot of fun with it.
Scripted might be a big word. I definitely agree with that. So what I want to point out right here, just off the top here, is if you go to, and we made a little friendly URL for this, .net. That's just an alias. That will take you here to Microsoft.com's .NET download page.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And this is a place where you go and download .NET Core depending on the kind of machine that you have.
Right. It walks you right through the whole process, and you can pick your machine. And then I've got a couple of references at the end that'll repeat this too.
Mm-hmm. We'll be bringing up this site and sites like it a lot. And we're going to pick .NET Core. Now, we're not going to get too much into this, probably. But it's worth pointing out that .NET is a family of programming platforms, of places you can write code. So .NET's more than one thing.
It is. .NET is a lot of things, and that's because it's been around for a while. .NET Core is a new iteration. It's the next step, and it's got some very good features that bring it up into alignment with a lot of other things that are happening out in the world today with other languages.
Right. So if you're a Node developer or a Ruby developer, or you've thought about learning those languages, you should find .NET Core to be a very comfortable place.
We certainly hope so. That's what it's designed to do, mm-hmm. and it's also designed to be easy to walk up to if you've never coded before. Like this is aimed not for never coding before, but being a little bit new, and hopefully won't go too slow for people that are coming over from Node. But if they want to go to watch ASP.NET, they can.
Yes, feel free to fast forward if you think we're going too slow. Very briefly, though, there's also the .NET framework, which is a little bit bigger framework that tends to run on Windows and big Windows servers. The nice thing about what we're going to show you, of course, is that most of these concepts apply to all of the .NETs, including Xamarin. Xamarin is the mobile iteration of .NET that lets you make IoT apps and iPhone apps and Android apps, and that's occurring in the other track. But of course, everything's recorded, so people can watch anytime they want.
Right, so we have the platforms, and we're looking at the platforms in these slides. But in addition to that, we've also got the a .NET standard idea with being able to write libraries that run on all of these platforms. So that's going to be a little behind the scenes on what we're showing you today. That an awful lot of the code that you'll write actually doesn't have to be rewritten as you go from something as huge a difference as this complex .NET framework all the way down to a little tiny mobile device. It's mm-hmm. amazing.
So we put together this little slide here that was important to point out. Who is this for, right? So you program in another language, maybe. You find your way around a text editor. And then you're curious. You browse the web and you view source.
Right, and that text editor might be Notepad.
Yep, and actually, for what we're doing in my first hour, I'll probably spend most of my time in either Notepad or an editor called Notepad 2.
Okay, fancy. Right. And I'll be showing other editors that are from Microsoft in that second hour. Mm-hmm. So hopefully it'll flow together and get you ready for opening an editor that's right for you and starting to write programs.
Mm-hmm. And then very briefly, we just want to show you this great map that just shows you that .NET Core and .NET Open Source in 2015 was starting to spread around the world. But now here in 2017, there's a lot of enthusiasm and excitement around .NET and what's happening in open source. So we hope that this is a foray for you to maybe get involved in open source.
That would be fantastic. .NET is a great stepping stone into that. And one of the great things about that is that the .NET open source communities in general make a huge point to be very welcoming and very helpful. So just because you haven't done a lot before doesn't mean that after you come up to speed a bit and you understand what's going on, if you see something that you'd either like to fix or even just like to give feedback on, you can do that as well because the communities are extremely open and ready to work with folks that haven't been in the industry for a very long time.
Mm-hmm. All right, so let's talk maybe about what we can build.
Yeah.
All right, so I'm going to do a lot of time at the console, all right? And I think that this is important. I like to think about it, the difference between an automatic car and a stick shift car. You learn how to drive a stick shift, and then maybe if you graduate to an automatic, but you still respect the inner workings of how the car shifts.
Right. I know you like to teach and you like to learn by knowing what the pieces are and then seeing them come together into a more effective and easy way. So some of the stuff you show first off might look like it's more work than it should be, but then it's going to evolve into something that really actually does the job in a really effective, efficient manner.
Exactly.
So that's the path we're going to be on.
Mm-hmm. So you can build console apps, and we'll make some Hello Worlds, and we'll play around with those. And then a little later in hour two, Kathleen will do a little bit of a web app, and then explore a real web app that has some sophistication to it.
That's right. I'm really excited to take that whole arc, because the Hello World, that's not what's interesting. What's interesting is actually to write applications that share whatever genius you've got with the rest of the world. And that's what programming is really all about.
All right, and then just very last slide here, just to give you a sense of where .NET is supported. .NET Core is supported basically everywhere. We probably could have put Raspberry Pi. It's not really supported on a Raspberry Pi, but it runs great.
And there's some IoT stuff that'll be going on during mm-hmm. this conference, and then hopefully that area is only going to get better going forward, all the way from the great big cloud world to the little tiny device world.
Yeah, I like to say from 64 gigs to 64K. Yeah. All right. So what I'm going to do is just come out to the command line. At this point here, I have gone to .NET. I went to .NET Core, and then I picked the .NET for my operating system. And actually, I should just run back here briefly.
And did you mention that was .NET Core 2.0 that we'll be using today?
Yeah, that's a good point. So here I am at .NET, and I can pick the system that I'm on. If I were on Linux, I could pick the flavor. If I'm on Windows, we're getting .NET Core 2.0, and I'll show you how you can pick your version and make sure that you have the right version mm-hmm. and confirm it. There's a video here. It's only about 2 minutes long, and it'll show you how quickly you can get started.
And that's also to point out that depending on the download site you go to, you might have a choice between runtime and SDK. And for what we're doing today, you need the SDK, the Software Developer's Kit.
That's a great point. If you go to a page like this and it gets confusing to you, the Software Developer Kit is what you want. And honestly, I would just encourage you to go down here to these step-by-step instructions.
Absolutely. The videos are like 3 minutes long and done by people that are fairly decent to look at, so it'll be a good way to get started and just make sure that that first step of getting from a blank machine to Hello World goes smoothly.
Mm-hmm. And we've got installers for both Windows and Mac. So again, I have a Windows machine. Kathleen has a Mac. Here is the Mac getting started. And again, it's just a installer. It's a PKG file on a Mac, and it's an MSI on Windows. So it's really next, finish.
That's
it'll
right.
be straightforward to install. All right. So I'm here at the desktop, And let's just make a folder. I'll just say, my fabulous app. Okay, so I have an empty folder here. I've just made the directory and I've gone into the directory. And maybe we'll just make a console. I can do this a couple ways. I can make the folder called My Console, mm-hmm. go in it, and then generate the application. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to type .NET. And to start, I'm actually just going to type .NET by itself. And that just proves to me that I have .NET installed. So if you've done this as well, you type .NET, and it says something, you probably have it installed. How would I double-check the version, though?
It would say something different that would not be pretty if you did not have .NET. It would certainly not respond as you'd expect.
It'd say something like .NET is not recognized or not a command.
Right, something that was unfriendly.
So I'll say .NET and I'll say dash dash version. We're going to pass in these switches to affect how .NET works.
And yes, the switches have two dashes, and then when they're abbreviated, they have one dash. And that might be a little surprising, but that's the way it works.
Okay. So I've confirmed that I have .NET 2.0.
That's right.
So that's cool. And then if you want to know a little bit more, you can type on Windows where.NET to ask the system, well, where is that? Mm-hmm. And if you're on Linux or a Mac, you would say which.NET.
That's correct.
Yeah, which one am I using? And here you can see it's in program files. And I like that it's in program files because previous versions of .NET have been in the Windows folder, which made me feel like it was a Windows-only thing. To be clear, it's not.
Absolutely. Well, to be clear, we have certain pieces that actually are specific, but it'll put the right one of those on the machine. The runtime has some specific native things to make it run very fast. But those will wind up in the right place for you, and you really don't have to think about that. The SDK goes across versions other than that.
Right. So
you've got the right one.
When I do .NET and I type .NET dash dash help, I will get that experience anywhere, and I could sit down on a Mac or a Linux machine and get the same thing.
Absolutely.
So I just typed .NET dash dash help, and you can see some commands over here. All right. We'll go into these commands in a little more detail, but the idea is that you type .NET, and then some verb, and then you pass in switches and information. So the simplest and the first and the most important command that I'm going to type is .NET new. Now here's a good initial tip. We saw how I can type .NET dash dash help. I can also go .NET new dash dash help, and I'll get help specific to new.
And this one's especially great because you get a list of the templates on your machine. This is not canned. This is actually a live list of what's on your machine and what you can do right now.
Mm-hmm. And we'll see a little bit later where I can add additional templates. So some people will have more templates and you can even make your own.
And starting out, you have a few less than you've got right now because you've already added some templates to your machine, I can see.
I sure have. So when I did that .NET new dash dash help, it shows me some of those switches that are specific to new. So remember before I said I could make a folder and I could go into that folder and then say new. I can also say, for example, dash O or dash dash output and tell it where to put my application.
And so, it'll create it, it'll mm-hmm. create the directory, and it'll create the application. And all you have to do is go in and see what's there.
All right, so let's do that. So .NET new console dash O my console app. So it says the template console app was created successfully.
Ready to go.
And then I hit DIR, it made a folder, I'm going to CD into that. And I'll type a DIR and I'll see that I've got a project file and I've got my program right there, as well as some supporting folders that we'll talk about a little bit later. Let's do this. I'm going to say Notepad and I'll open up that program.cs and see what's going on in there. Let's make that nice and big. I'm using Notepad 2. Which gives me the nice coloring of the keywords here. But this is not a code editor. It's just a pretty notepad, like text editor, whatever. You might use Vim or Emacs or Notepad or text editor, whatever makes you happy.
But on a normal Windows machine, you just wouldn't have the color. Everything else that you're doing would work fine.
Exactly. Well said. So that's my program. It is class program. We'll hear more about this when Bill goes into the details of C#. And then I have my main function. This is the entry point where my app starts. Everything starts here. They could just call that start. And then I'm going to go out to the console. This is the console that we're writing out to. And I'll say console.writeline. All right. And we're going to say the traditional hello world. This is the standard hello world. So I'm going to just hit Alt Tab and go back here. And I'm going to type .NET run. So to be clear, I've done my help. I did new. And I'm going to do run. I haven't done anything else.
The only other thing you've done is adjusted some directories to be in the right place.
Exactly. I've gone to certain directories. So I'll say .NET run, and we will see what happens. So there'll be a short pause here, and it'll say hello world. Now that pause is significant, and that pause is interesting. We'll do that again. .NET run, 1.1002, and there you go. So some people might say, well, gosh, why didn't that instantly run, right? Why is hello world such a big deal? Well, we are using an SDK right now, right? We're developing software.
That's right.
Yeah, we're not just running it. We're not just running the software. We are actually building it. We're making sure it's up to date. We're compiling that C# code into something.
Right, so it takes the actual text you saw in Notepad and it turns it into something that the computer can understand. And it does all of that up front. So once you start going, then it's going to be very, very fast. So if you have a complex application, it's going to have that little bit to build when you're working. But then once that's built, that's what you're going to be using later. So you don't have that kind of a delay when you're actually running an application.
Mm-hmm. Now, if I go back here and I say .NET --help to just familiarize myself again with these commands, I'll show you new again, but I want to just juxtapose it with build. Here we say .NET run, it builds and runs. That's what that pause is. If I say .NET build, we'll get a little bit more information, and it's actually going to tell me the real file on disk. That's my hello world. Hello world's down there, all right?
And just to be clear, what it actually does is get you ready to run all the things that need to be done. Mm-hmm. You'll be talking about a step or two later that also may need to happen when you hit run. And so once we get there, run is just getting you ready to go, and one of the things it's doing right now is the build.
Okay, so to juxtapose .NET run, which is 1.1002, hello world, and having it already built and sitting in that folder, I can say .NET exec or execute, and we'll go and we'll say bin or binary. I'm going to go ahead and just turn off my watch there. Of course, our many fans, Kathleen, that are watching us right now are texting us positive messages as we do our jobs.
I'm hoping my phone's turned off.
Yes, I apologize. So I'm going to say .NET exec. So this is interesting. Rather than saying run, which helps me as a developer, I'm just going to say execute the thing that I already built.
You would have had to already build it, or you wouldn't be able to
find
it. It wouldn't exist.
It wouldn't exist. You see how fast that is?
That's right.
Boom. It's literally done as fast as I can press enter. Uh-huh. Okay. So this is an important thing to point out about C# and about .NET, is that this is a compiled experience, right. A compiled language, right? Okay, but for the purposes of developing software, you're going to typically go .NET run, things will happen, and then you'll go back over to your code, and we'll say hello everyone at .NET conf, control S or save, come back, .NET run again.
And does the build again, so incorporates that new code that you just wrote, mm-hmm. and now it's going to say hello everyone.
Right, and then again, there's that pause. But if I decided to go and just run the already compiled thing,
it's
do that.
To go.
Now, I'm going
to
show you a little trick here. This is a great thing if you are not familiar with the command line, if this is one of the few times that you've come out to the command line. If you want to get back out into Windows, you can type start, and that'll load up Windows Explorer. And if you say start and pass in a period, it'll load Windows Explorer at the current folder. Okay,
that's a great tip.
So I'm down here in C, users, Scott, my console app, I just type start dot, and this is going to allow me to go and look at that file. I just want to point out that that is a .NET Core 2.0, and then that's my file, and then these are some supporting things that we won't be talking about today.
And the reason it calls that out is that .NET is backwards compatible, so if somebody's already done work in older versions, then it doesn't just stop working and be broken. So that's why it actually identifies where we're at right now.
Right. There's different versions of .NET and .NET Core. So this is .NET Core 2.0. Now, one other thing that's worth pointing out is that I said .NET new, and we got a C# application, which is the language that we're going to be using
right.
today.
It's the default.
Mm-hmm. It's the default, but there are other languages. And we're going to see not only a two-hour tutorial on C# today with Bill Wagner, but also F#.
That's right.
All right. So if you take a look here, notice that language is another option. I use the option -O for output. I can also say -lang or -language and pass in a different option. So here you can see Visual Basic and F#.
Right. Now, make your pick.
So I'm not going to spend a lot of time doing this, but it is worthwhile. I'll just go back to the desktop. I'm going to save my current directory here, and I'm going to go back to the desktop.
So that just saves the location so you can get back to it easily. It doesn't actually, it just helps the editor get there fast.
It will help the console get there back. It'll actually type CD for me. So we'll do
correct.
That in a second.
Correct, I misspoke.
So we'll go just into another folder, and I'll say .NET new, just like I did before.
So if you can add the language here.
Dash lang, or is it dash lang or dash
it's dash lang? It's dash lang. Dash dash language, dash lang, sorry.
That's okay. I need to remember that myself. That
there are a few things that are confusing like that, and that's why even if you're like feeling solid, don't be surprised if you wind up saying .NET dash dash help or .NET verb dash dash help. Because getting back to knowing what those details are, you still have to do that sometimes.
Yeah, absolutely. I find myself trying to remember those things a lot, too.
Yeah.
And that's totally okay. So I'll just say dash dash language F sharp, and then I'll make that console application, again, over in a different folder. And I just want to point out that I didn't get a program.cs, I got a program.fs.
That's right.
Yeah, and if we go and look at that, I can type it out. Right, it's a different language. A whole different world. And we'll learn about that different world later today, and I would encourage you to check it out. It's good to know more than one language, isn't it?
It's great, especially if you're starting out to kind of dip your toes into a couple of different languages, because some of them may feel wrong. They just might feel a bit intimidating. It's always worth spending a few hours before you make that decision, though, because something that initially looks scary on the surface can be extremely easy once you get rolling with it. So all the curly brackets, braces, and all of that's new, then you kind of get the hang of the fact that that's just open and close points, and that F sharp works differently, doesn't have them, has some different approaches to things. So yeah.
And if you try multiple languages, you'll find the one that's the language for you.
I think so.
I call it the language of your soul.
Yeah, sometimes it takes a little while to find that. Yeah. And sometimes there's other things that you want to think about as well. But certainly, if you hate the language and it's grating with you, then that's not a good experience. Mm-hmm. Or if you stay confused too long, that's not a good experience. And programming's to be fun. Mm-hmm. We have a great time. We've done this long because it's so much fun.
Indeed. So try the different languages that are out there. And remember that it's all .NET, though. And this can be a little bit confusing because sometimes people say, well, does my C-sharp code talk to my F-sharp code? Can I share my libraries or my DLLs? And you can.
Yeah.
You can. So F-sharp and C-sharp and VB can all talk to each other, and you can just pick the language that makes you happy.
That's right. So I would just say that that's within a family. So there are languages that you can't talk to C-sharp easily with that run on just on other platforms and things.
Okay. All right. So I'm in the my F-sharp. And then before, I showed a little funny tip there where I said push directory. I pushed it into my stack. I'm just going to pop back. That's just a fun little tip when you're at the command line there to get back to where I was because I didn't want to lose my place.
And is that in Windows or is that something you added?
No, that's just a thing. It's been around since, I think, DOS.
Yeah.
Yeah, many, many years.
So it's already there.
Yeah, it's already there.
Yeah, you taught me that. I didn't know that.
Well, it's one of those.
A couple days ago, you taught me. That's
it's great. One of those fun little obscure things. Another fun one, again, this is Windows, and Kathleen will show you fun things on a Mac a little bit later, is if you press F7. F7, someone told me once they thought that this was a Windows 10 feature. And I said, no, that was around 20 years ago. So F7, of course, is great for learners, though, and for people that are getting started, because it's got a history. And if you're like, oh, I typed it before and it worked, well, that's great. You can go back and type that again just by hitting Enter.
The up arrow key will just get you back. It'll scroll through the same list, but you can't get the full view of it.
Exactly. So pushing up like that gets me my history, and pushing F7 gets me a box of my history.
Yeah.
All right. So here's my console app. And in this particular case, I'm going to do one other thing. Let's go back to our app, and I'm going to say console. Oh, actually, this is good. I'm going to type a misspelling accidentally.
Yeah, let's do that.
Misspell. I didn't mean
mess
to.
Mess it up.
So I'm going to say console.readline, which is going to make it stop and wait for me to push enter. Mm-hmm. But notice that I have misspelled that.
Yeah.
All right.
I'm not thinking this is going to go well.
Nope. Everything's going to blow up. All right.
No smoke, just a lot of red.
All right. The name console does not exist in the current project. And what's nice is that it actually gives me the exact line number. It says the build failed. Now, if I type .NET build, I'll get a little bit more information, but it's the same thing. So this, I just want to remind you that run implies build.
It just is a quieter build.
Mm-hmm. Interestingly, though, if I went and said, I'm just going up, up, up. If I went and said .NET exec, it still works. So what is that? That's the previous build, the one that worked.
That's right, because it didn't work, and so it never overwrote the file that was sitting there on disk. And so, oh, well, we've got the wrong one. So you do want to pay a little bit of attention. If you see red, it's probably a good idea not to ignore it because it's probably not doing what you want. Yellow, I'd read it, but red is definitely, it didn't do what you asked it to do.
All right. So I'm going to change my misspelling. And then again, just in Notepad, I'll hit Control S to save it. I'll hit Alt Tab to go back. Say .NET Run. We'll go and build that. Now it's paused. See? I didn't get my prompt back. That's because it's waiting for me to press Enter. And then I'll hit Enter, and then it'll go. All right? I'm going to do that again. It'll run. It'll pause. And then this is just a little bit of inside baseball here. I'm just going to hit Control-Alt-Delete, and I'm going to pick the Task Manager.
So we're going to actually see it running.
Yeah. And what I want to do is just to show you where that .NET appears. And something interesting, there's two .NETs there. These are running in memory. Those are your two .NETs. But notice that one of them's tiny, mm-hmm. and one of them's a little bit bigger. Remember before, when we said where.NET, it said programfiles.NET, yada, yada, yada. But there's no version number in there, but you said I was using .NET 2, .NET mm-hmm. Core 2.0. Mm-hmm. So that's interesting. What's going on there? Well, if I go over into programfiles.NET, just look at it in my directory. And as long as you don't move anything, it's OK to do this.
It's look, but don't touch.
Look, but don't touch, exactly. And I look at my SDK. Look at that. I can see I have multiple versions, mm-hmm. right? So I actually have an older preview build of .NET 2. And then I have .NET Core 1 and 1.1. Mm-hmm. When you type .NET, it will do the right thing, and it'll pick the right version for what you're doing. And then we can maybe see a little bit later where we could pin to a specific version. And this is really important because you and I might be working on a project together, and we as a team have decided that we're going to use .NET 2.0.
Right.
But maybe I'm doing some preview work or some 1.1 work. I don't want to mess our experience up as we work as a team while I work on my side project.
Right, right. And that there's a few complex layers to that when you get working with teams. Mm-hmm. So I guess part of what I'd say on that is that folks that are just starting out mm-hmm. Can just kind of align things in a small group that they're learning together
exactly.
with. It's going to be easiest. And then if you're working with a team where this becomes an issue, most likely that's going to be a team with some more experienced people, and just make sure they explain to you what their strategy is for working with that so you don't accidentally make any changes mm-hmm. that mess it up.
And the most important thing to keep things simple, like you said, when you're learning is just .NET --version
yeah.
or .NET --info, which
right.
will give you a little bit more information.
It's a lot of stuff, and you might be going, oh my gosh, where's all that coming from? But it does tell you things like what version of Windows you're on. Same thing you would see if you went to About. And then there's two numbers. There's a number at the top, which is the runtime that you're running on because you said .NET info. So it's the info about .NET itself. Mm-hmm. And at the bottom, there's the actual SDK, and that's called the shared framework host. Might change. Those numbers may not always align, but right now they're the same numbers.
Right. And if you ever find yourself going and filing a bug or talking to a technical friend or maybe going up to
absolutely.
GitHub, they're going to ask you to type .NET --info because it gives them context about how to fix something.
Exactly. They'll just have you send into a file, and they'll grab that because there have been a lot of changes as the DOT NET lifecycle has evolved. In fact, it's not always even quite had that name. Mm-hmm. So across that 1.0, 1.1, 2.0, there have been some changes. So if you have questions for somebody, you're going to want to clarify that. And if you go out and ask questions on the web, which is essential to learning, you'll learn, you know, Stack Overflow is your friend. You do need to pay attention. And if it says 1.0 or 1.1, it may not be relevant to the problem that you've got.
All right. So I'm going to go here and show you .NET new help again. We're going to go a little bit more into these templates. But sometimes you can't just sit down and write the application entirely from scratch. You're going to go and use a library from somewhere else. All right. Mm-hmm. You're going to pull in additional information. So one of the things that I thought would be interesting would be to use some JSON.
Yeah, so JSON is a way that we can put data together and have expectations. So if you give me a piece of JSON data, I can then know how to read that. So there's been many different formats over the years that mm-hmm. have allowed this kind of interchange, comma delimited files and XML and JSON, and they all still have their place. But right now, JSON's the most common, and it's the easiest for humans to interact with. Mm-hmm. So it's a great place to start. But .NET itself does a lot better if it uses the library to help it do that work.
Right.
And so there's a very common library all over the internet, which is Newtonsoft.
Right. So JavaScript Object Notation is the JSON, and then Newtonsoft is a library that I'm going to bring in to talk about that. Now, I'll just give you an example of like what some JSON looks like, because I think it's fun to see these things instead of talk about them abstractly. There is a lovely API that is the Pokemon API, all right? And this is a way that I can go and look at the information about all my crucial Pokemon.
All the things that you have to keep track of.
I know that you're deeply, deeply interested in Pokemon.
Is this normal Pokemon or Go, or is it all the same?
It's kind of the same universe.
Is it the same
universe? It's like the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
This was a stupid question.
Pokemon Cinematic Universe.
Yeah, no. I love that. I love when these things get people talking to each other and hate it when it causes them to walk into traffic.
Exactly. So I want to show you here. This is just, I would go and visit this API, mm-hmm. and I would get back some JSON, all mm-hmm. right? So I just want to show you what JSON looks like. So that's the name of the Pokemon and how tall the Pokemon is. I don't know if that's inches or meters, probably inches. And then the things that the Pokemon does. And then that JSON sometimes will contain links to other JSON, all right?
And in the second hour, we're going to look at creating some JSON. We're not going to look deeply at how it's done, mm-hmm. but we actually are going to look at an app that creates JSON.
Yeah, so you're going to find yourself moving around the web. You might find technologies like XML. You might find things like JSON. You might find just text files. This is data that you're going to want to consume, and you're going to need a library to do that. So that's an example of what JSON looks like. Let's talk about that package that we would need.
Right. How do we access this library? We know we want it, mm-hmm. but it's not right now in our application. How do we make it part of our application? When it's out on the web someplace, we didn't write it.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
We don't want to write it.
So these packages are called NuGet packages. You're going to go NuGet.org. You don't have to go to do this, but you'll find yourself here often because you're going to want to go search for packages.
Right.
Okay? So NuGets are an N-U-G-E-T, these packages. And the package manager is just the way that you go and get these libraries, consume them, and share them. We're going to show you how to consume a library, how to make your project's libraries. And then in the future, you might want to go and look at one of our longer courses at like Microsoft Virtual Academy and then produce your own libraries.
That's right. It's not terribly difficult to do, and some of the tools that Microsoft has will make that easier for you.
Mm-hmm. So I'm going to go here and type in JSON and see the different choices that there are. And I'll see that this one here, Newtonsoft.json, is very popular, 81 million downloads. And it's updated often.
Is it the most popular NuGet package?
Well, it is because it is the one that Microsoft uses. So Microsoft brings that in when it does its own thing. Yeah. So when I click here, we're going to see some interesting stuff. It says the name of it. And then you'll notice that there's a tabbed list here. Okay. We're using the .NET CLI, and it actually gives me the command. This is really nice for beginners to understand that. There are other package managers, though. So Visual Studio, which you'll use in hour two, has its own package manager that you can window that you can look at. That's the command you would use. Mm-hmm. And then there's also one called Packet, which is a third-party open source one. And then you can use that command. But since we're using the .NET CLI, we'll do this one.
Let's use that one.
Yeah. So here it says --version, and it's saying, do you want that specific version? But just for the purposes of learning and also because it's sometimes you just want the latest one, I'll just grab this minus that --version, and we'll see if anything changes.
Right.
Okay.
So by not including the version number, if there's a new version of Newtonsoft that comes out, then that one would be downloaded. And sometimes it's very good. You have the latest and greatest. Mm-hmm. And sometimes you've already tested your application with the old one. And you're not crazy about the idea of somebody, without you knowing it, bringing down a new one. And so because of that, you're in control of whether or not it comes down automatically with a new version.
Great point. So let's just really briefly remind ourselves, we're here at this console app. We'll look inside. It just says, hello world. Mm-hmm. But we have another file here. Before I go and do that, I want to point out this other file, my console app, the CS Proj, or this C# project. Let's look at that file. That's an XML file. It's pretty simple, so you shouldn't freak out. We're using the SDK. We're making an executable. And we are targeting .NET Core 2.0. That all seems to make a lot of sense. Okay, I don't think I'd want to spend a lot of time in there.
I don't think there's much there to spend a lot of time with. But let's see if what you're going to do changes it.
Great point. So I'll say .NET add, not .NET new, but .NET add package. I can add other things. Newtonsoft.json, and I'll hit enter.
So by default, the .NET, D-O-T-N-E-T, works on the project that's in the current directory. Mm-hmm. So that's why you don't have to type more stuff. If you want to be in a different directory, you could tell it where to put it, but that just is a lot more work than you need to do.
Right. So that brings up a good point. .NET.exe is kind of working within the directory that you're in. Mm-hmm. If you were in a different directory, it might do different stuff.
That's
when
right.
we talked earlier about the different versions, it would do different stuffs on the different versions in those places. So know the mm-hmm. folder that you're in
right.
and stay in your lane in that place.
Right. If you get an error that says that it's confused and it can't find something, you're just in the wrong folder. It's an error that you might mm-hmm. run into.
Now, this might be an initially overwhelming amount of information here, but what they're doing is telling you exactly what happened. We're going to add a package to My Console app, and then it's just showing you where it went off to get that, and it went and downloaded that file. And then at the bottom here it says, great, Newtonsoft is compatible with everything you're doing. And look, it added version 10.0.3 because it's the latest, to
That's
your
right.
point. All right, so let's do this again. Let's go and look at the inside of that. And we'll see that a line was added to our project. Now again, you don't need to look at that, but this is the manual shift versus automatic.
Right, it's just seeing that something happens to the project file. The project file is the thing that leads the charge here, that does the defining of the world that you're actually building. So when you say build, what happens?
Yep.
What happens is it goes to the project file, and that's the thing that defines the rules for that build.
Exactly. So this is interesting. I said go and get Newtonsoft. I said .NET add. Where did I do that? .NET add package. I didn't say the version. It got the latest, but then I want to point this out. It then took that latest number and it pinned it, or
it put it
into the CS proj.
I had forgotten that it did that. So mm-hmm. now that thing I talked about, where if there's a new one that comes out, because it's actually pinned here,
yeah.
it's actually not going to download a new
so
one.
So it's kind of an interesting situation. The .NET add package picked the latest one today.
And then pinned it.
I could do this exact same demo tomorrow.
Uh-huh.
Maybe it would be 10.0.4.
Right.
And get a different experience. The point here is that you need to be conscious. You need to be aware of what is happening from a time perspective. And something you try on a Tuesday might not happen on the same on a Wednesday if you aren't conscious of your versions.
Right, which is, since this is going to be recorded and people can watch it in the future, it's
yeah.
probably worth pointing out.
Yeah, it might be a different version.
Yeah.
All right. So I'm going to go and clear that out, and then I'm going to open up that, actually I don't need to open it, it's already open. I'll open up
yeah.
program.cs. All right, so I'm still in Notepad, so I don't get any of the fun help or what they call IntelliSense. No one's going to help me do this correctly, so I may make a mistake.
You might.
Yeah,
and
if
I
did.
And I might catch it.
And you would very likely catch it.
Yeah.
That's.
I'm not as good as a compiler, though, so I don't promise to catch everything.
You're pretty good, and I've seen you catch these things before. So I'm here. Before we used the system, which is the libraries that come with .NET, I'm going to say using Newtonsoft.json.
So let me just point out what this using is. So we already told the project as a whole that we wanted to be able to talk to Newtonsoft.json. That's what you saw in the project file. Coming here, we also have to tell this code that it's okay to use that. And it does a whole lot of things by making us say that a second time, including as you work with IntelliSense, keeping that in a workable manner. But you're saying, yes, in this particular code, I will be using that library that I've already told you I want included in the overall package, the overall application I'm writing.
Mm-hmm. Another way to think about it is that there's stuff available because we brought that package in, like mm-hmm. like JObject, that's just an example.
Yeah.
I could say Newtonsoft.json.jObject, just like I could call you Kathleen Dollard from that,
first of her name,
you know,
yeah.
and I could go on
yeah.
and on and on.
Yeah.
But we could put a using statement around that, and
That's
we'll
right.
just say using.
And then we don't have to do all the rest
And if
of
you're
it.
At the Dollard family reunion and you've said using Dollards, then everyone's a Dollard.
That's right.
Right.
That's
okay.
right. That's, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
It's a good
all
way
right.
to look at it.
So I just said using Newtonsoft.json.
Mm-hmm.
And I've got a class called program here that is my entry point we talked about. I'm just going to make a little bit of room here and make another class, because
okay.
this is what I'm going to do is I'm going to kind of create some JSON.
Okay.
This is going to be very simple, but I just want to show you how to use another library and some of the functionality that that library gives you. So we'll make a little space for this class. And again, don't worry about too many of the details. You'll be able to look this up. You'll be able to talk and work with Bill Wagner as he does 2 solid hours on this. You'll see how to make classes. And then over in the F# one, you'll see how to make classes in F# as well. I've just made a person that has first names and last names, or first names and surnames. And I'm pretty sure that that'll compile. Now, if I compiled it at this point, even though I brought in JSON, even though I made a new class called Person, I've ultimately
You didn't do anything with it.
Right. I just let it kind of sit there. I declared that it existed.
Right. But you haven't created an instance of it. So we just, the definition, no instance yet.
All right. So let's go and make a variable called P.
Okay.
And we'll say it's a new person. So we're going to say new person P. And I'm going to say,
now,
hey.
Being nice, because I'm not fussing at him
for
calling, for having a one-letter variable name.
Oh, should
but I
make it something else? So you'd like it to be more like that?
Well, I just want to make sure that if people are watching this, that they know that that the better names they have, the better their programs are going to be to understand, the easier it's all going to be. So it's much easier if you just kind of get in the habit of doing that.
Mm-hmm.
So.
And then we've got a couple of questions that are coming in.
We'll grab those in just a minute.
As soon as we finish this, I'll answer these excellent questions. So thank you for that.
Yeah, awesome.
Okay, so I'm going to say P, but Kathleen's point, you can have lots of additional stuff instead of that. We'll say first name is Scott, and last is Handsome Man, and we'll go like that. Now, what I'm going to do is I'm going to take that person. You imagine that there's a person out there, and hanging off of it is first name and last name.
And we could make more
height
if we wanted
and birthday
to.
And
we're just
going to
make one, but we could make more.
Exactly. We could make, make a bunch of people.
We can make some
make
as
a
we
list
want.
Of people. All right, put a database of people. All right, what I'm going to do is I'm going to call, this is using some Newtonsoft stuff, JSON convert. And we're going to serialize or turn it into a string. We're going to say, hey, serialize P. We're going to make us a JSON object. And then I'm going to put a little option here that you don't need to worry about, but basically it'll make it easier for me to see this. I'm going to indent.
Instead of being just one long junk, it's going to look pretty on the page. That's all that does.
So we're going to say, hey, take the Scott Hanselman JSON object and serialize that. And then I'm going to put that itself into something, and I'll just make a string called JSON. All right?
All right.
And then before, instead of saying hello everyone at .NET Conf, let's go and say, console.writeline JSON. So let's look at this again. Make a person, serialize a person with the library that we brought in.
Right.
And then output that library.
Great.
And we wrote it all in Notepad. Yes, there are tools besides Notepad. A question came in. Can
I know,
you use
I saw that,
tools?
Brian. Great question. We can come look at that in the second hour. I'll be looking at tools that are way more fun than Notepad to use. It's not my first choice.
Definitely Notepad is not super fun. Okay, cool. So this is great. I just got an error.
You
formatting
did.
Does not contain a definition for
indented.
Indented.
I missed it.
See? Where were you, Kathleen? Indented. I want to indent.
You do
stuff.
Have to spell things correctly.
You do
Scott.
Have to spell things correctly there. Let's see if I get it right in the second try. All right. So we saw our Pokemon JSON. Now we have our.
We made our own JSON.
We made our own JSON. So that's just a very, very simple example. And as, of course, as Kathleen mentioned, we will see in a little bit where we can consume our own JSON, create our own JSON, move JSON around from place to place. This is a very common thing to do. So that's important to point out.
Do you want to get some questions now?
Yeah, let's do a few questions.
All right.
So banging these out a little bit at a time, of course, can you use things other than Notepad? Absolutely. Silly. Silly for me to imply that you would not want to. You can use any editor that makes you happy.
This is just an approach of saying that it's not the editor that makes the .NET chime and work. And if we dive into a complex editor first, then there may be an implication that that's magic and that's doing something. And it's not. All the magic is in those characters that Scott's writing in Notepad. That's where all the stuff happens from.
That's a great point. If I build an application, is there a cost associated with it? Like, do I have to pay for distributing that application? You do not.
You absolutely do not, but let's just make sure that we don't want to confuse one point, which is that's because you're in the Microsoft ecosystem, and getting started is something that Microsoft's really committed to, and so they make it free and easy to get started to. In Microsoft, it won't cost you anything to deliver it, except in certain ways you might deliver it, such as Azure.
Well, yeah, that's a good point.
You're never going to have to spend.
Good point. If I build a console app, if I build a game, if I build a whatever, the costs will come in how you deliver it. If you put it in the App Store, maybe Apple will charge things for that.
But it absolutely will not cost you anything to give it to your friend, to give it to people you know. It's only some side cases that might cost something that you just cannot do it that way.
So .NET is free. You can use it. I use Notepad. You'll use Visual Studio Code. We'll see that a little bit that later. Use what makes you happy, all right?
And everything I will show in the tools section will also be free for almost everyone. I'll clarify that.
For people who are new to programming, what language is best? That's a tough one.
Ultimately, you're going to get us into so much trouble asking that question.
Pick the language that makes you happy.
People are so passionate.
I start with C#. But other people say that F# is the way to start. Other people say Visual Basic is the way to start.
Yeah, I can make a case for any language to start with. So it's really hard for us to jump in and answer that question. So Visual Basic has a somewhat simpler syntax. C# has a lot of examples on the web. And F# has a nice syntax and has a huge capability of the way you can grow into the language. So I can give those as three good reasons for each of the different languages, and then maybe that'll help you a little bit. But yeah, I'm not going to tell you which is best to learn because it's up to you. It's just not the same for everybody.
It's tough. I would also say ask your friends, find out what the community around you is using, and consider them.
If you have people, if you have somebody, like somebody in your family or somebody that you know or any sort of resource, then that is so valuable to be able to go sit down with somebody, because what happens is you're learning stuff and it's all seeming easy, and then there's something hard. And you don't know whether it's just a little speed bump that looks really big or whether it's something complicated. You sit down with somebody for 5 minutes and you either solve it or you find out that you've actually opened a new door and that it's a whole new world that you have that you want to learn about.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So here I've got my basic application.
Okay.
It doesn't really do too much. Just in the remaining time here, I want to create a couple of more applications and put them into a solution.
Okay. I should let you work. I'm going to let you.
No, we'll do it together.
Yeah.
So a solution would be a collection of projects, right?
That's right.
I can do all that from the command line, and I can still manipulate it with Notepad, but I'll be able to put it on a USB key or put it on the web, and then I'll give it to you, and you can actually look at that solution inside of Visual Studio and see how nice it will.
Right, and to be very clear with what you said, you're going to write code right now that I'm actually going to show in the second hour.
On a Mac. Yeah, or on Mac, or on Windows, in Visual Studio.
Or on Windows, or on both, we'll see.
All right, so I have a console app, and I want to point out that I put it inside of another folder. Remember I put it inside of this My Fabulous app? So I have a folder with another folder in it. So here's my console app. If I type .NET new, there's console app, but there's also the choice to make a class library.
Okay.
Newtonsoft.json was a class library.
That's right.
Right? I could make a library too. A library is just a shared bunch of code that someone else could potentially use. So let's go and say .NET new class library, and we'll use that -o to make a folder for me. We'll say my class library. And again, these are not creative names. I probably should have thought of something more creative. And then we'll go into my, actually, let me just say dir. You see, there's my app and my class library side by side. Okay. And then if I say .NET new, I could even make what's called a unit test. We won't get too much into unit testing, but you write a program, you should typically have a test that sits next to it, and the test just asserts a bunch of assumptions, like, hey, if I wrote a program, it does 2 + 2. You should probably make sure it really does equal 4.
Right. Or so the example that you showed earlier, you could create a person that was a particular person, create the JSON, and make sure it looked like you were expecting.
That's a great point. If I'm serializing JSON or going and getting a certain Pokemon, I want to assert that that's the Pokemon I got.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
Good point. So we can write tests. So I could say .NET new, and there's different test runners. There's one called XUnit. There's one called NUnit. There's a number of them. I'll use XUnit. You can use NUnit, or you can Google around with Bing and learn about different options as well. So we'll say my unit tests. All right, so I've got three different projects here. I could go into each folder and run around and, you know, and manipulate these in a number of different ways. At this point, it's still simple.
And they're all separate right now.
But I don't really want to do a lot of this in Notepad, so we'll see in a little bit after the break why you'd want to use Visual Studio.
Yes.
All right. But what I want to do, though, is I'm going to say .NET new again and see what my options are. And I point out that there is a thing called a solution file. All right. A solution is an SLN. So when you're out there in the world getting code, you'll bump into these solution files. And you'll see, oh, there's not just a project I want to download. There's 20, and they're bundled into a solution.
It's a bucket. It's a bucket for projects.
It is. It's a bucket. So we'll say .NET new solution. And I want to point out, I just said .NET new SLN, and you notice that it took the name of the directory it was in, to your
That's
point.
Right.
It's very contextual. The .NET command line is very smart about that. Now, just because I made that doesn't mean it added all of these projects.
Well, that's correct. They don't know about each other, and the solution doesn't know about them yet.
Right.
We haven't told it. It doesn't make assumptions along those lines.
So we saw that we could go dash dash help on different commands. Let's assume I don't know how to do anything with these solutions.
But maybe it's off SLN.
Right. So I'll go and say .NET SLN dash dash help, and I'll see, look, I can add a project to the solution file.
That seems like what we want to do now.
All right. So .NET SLN add, and I'm going to just hit tab. We'll say class library. .NET SLN add console app.
So you have to actually go down to the actual project file that was created, and we looked at one of those project files earlier. It's pretty simple. We added the Newtonsoft JSON to that.
There we go. So now I've added them all into that solution. All right. Now what happens? This is just curious. Maybe I'll get this wrong. You can tell me. If I type .NET build, what will happen?
There.
Look at this.
Yeah.
So I type .NET build. I'm at that top solution level.
And it makes a guess.
It makes an educated guess.
Well, it knows what's in the solution. It finds the solution. It looks in the current folder, finds the solution. It's very, very folder-based. Finds that solution, looks inside the solution, says, these are the projects that you wanted to use. You probably want to build them. Yep. And it builds all of them.
Exactly. And in this case, I was lucky and they all worked. But I want to make a couple of quick points as we end this first hour.
Yeah.
Let's do this. We have three folders. We made a console app. We made a class library, and we made some unit tests.
That's right.
All right, let's go into the console app, and I type .NET run, and it runs. Now I'm going to go out of there, and I'm going to go into the class library.
Yep, let's give this a shot, see what happens.
And I'm going to run it. Unable to run your project.
This is
a library, right? Runnable projects should be executables or EXEs. This is not something I can run, all right? Now, let's go back out and let's go into the unit tests. Let's try to run those. Nothing happens at all. Those are unit tests. I need to type .NET test. .NET test will then do what's called a unit test runner. It will go and find those tests and run them. Let's actually take a look at what a test looks like briefly. This tests are facts. Or, you know, this is a
with
fact.
Statements.
It is a
is
fact.
It true?
Now, in this case here,
true,
I actually have no facts. I've proven nothing. I've run a test, but it was a nothing test.
But we had a runner had to come out and find these and run them.
So very, very briefly, let's go out and search for XUnit example. I'll just do a real quick test. You'll find a lot of these things up on, look, see, up on GitHub. You can find all kinds of great examples. And let's look at an example here. There you go. Here's a nice one. Are these two strings equal?
That's a great example.
And just like every good programmer who's learning, I'm going to copy-paste that directly into production.
Right. It's a good idea not to copy-paste code you don't understand for a couple of reasons, especially if it says nasty things. But
you got to learn somehow.
You got to learn, and understanding what's out there is really the best way to learn today. There's so many resources available on the web.
I'm going to name my function whatever makes me happy.
I like your name.
You like that?
Yeah.
All right. Let's see if this works. So I'll go back over here, and I will say .NET test. Notice that test implies build, just like running implies build.
That's right. That's right.
And then it went and said test passed. Now, this is an important thing about testing that you'll want to learn about. We don't have time for it today, but they say it doesn't really count until you see the test fail.
That's right.
I have no way of knowing that this is good unless I've made it fail, and then I fixed it, and now I know it works.
Well, we showed that, because our very first test passed. It was just dandy, wasn't it?
Well, but I've never seen
a bad test.
I'm going to change it, and I know a lot of people are playing .NET bingo waiting for me to say fancy pants, so you can go ahead and... I'm just going to change the test so they can't succeed to make sure I didn't do something wrong. There we go. That's what I wanted to see.
So that's what it looks like when it fails.
Are these strings the same? Expected, fancy pants, actual string... test string, good. So now, I'll change that, run it again, .NET test. You're getting that experience.
Because an empty test or one that forgets the assert passes. And so that means absolutely nothing. And that's the goal of having the failing test, is just to make sure the test itself is correct.
Exactly. Now I'll show you one final thing as we end. You'll notice that we've been spending this hour really getting into the detail, going very slow, trying to make sure that people can keep up. But at the same time, I've been doing a lot of repetitive motion.
You have. You've been typing like crazy and all that.
I've been alt-tabbing, alt-tab, alt-tab. I've been spending a lot of time typing .NET, .NET, .NET at the command line. That's called what we say is the developer's inner loop. I'm in a loop here. Mm-hmm. But if you think about it, I haven't written a lot of code, but I have spent a lot of time messing around at the command line.
Yeah.
That can be a little bit frustrating for some people, myself included. So what we're going to try to do is make that a little simpler. And there's a little trick. If you go and search for the .NET watcher, what if I had something watch my code, and then it would build it for me,
mm-hmm.
right? It would make it a little bit easier. So what I'm going to do is grab this instructions here, how to install this .NET watcher. And I'm going to go over here and do this little bit of an advanced thing. I won't necessarily need this kind of stuff if I'm not out at the command line, but I'm going to say, go and get .NET Watcher. Now, because I've gone and edited that manually, I didn't mm-hmm. use .NET add something,
right.
I need to go and say .NET restore to make sure I get that watcher.
The watcher is very similar to when we brought JSON NetSoft mm-hmm. in.
Yeah, exactly.
We need to do the same sort of steps, but now we're doing them explicitly instead of letting build do all of that.
Mm-hmm. So let's go and say not .NET test, but let's see if this works. We'll type .NET watch mm-hmm. and then test. So we're going to wrap the command in another command.
Right, so every single time code changes, the tests are going to run again, and we can keep an eye on it.
All right, so it just did the test, and now it says waiting for a file to change.
Right.
Now, I went, and in Windows here, I just used the Windows key, and I can go and say up, down, left, right, and I can move these windows around. So I just said Windows right and Windows left, and I split my screen. Now, I've got Notepad on the right, I've got my app on there, and we'll go back and we'll say fancy pants. Now, watch. I'm going to hit Control. Actually, no, I'll do this. I'll push the save icon, the 3D printed save icon here that no one remembers as a floppy, and I'll hit Save, and you'll watch on the left-hand side, it automatically stops, rebuilds, and tests it. My tests fail. I fix it. I hit Control S to save. It notices it. I've immediately shortened the developer's inner loop and hopefully
right.
accelerated your learning.
Right. So Watcher is really something that you want to grab if you're working off of the command line.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the stuff that I'll show you this afternoon, or not this afternoon, in the second hour, mm-hmm. is also going to be useful with Watcher.
Absolutely. So we have kind of learned the basics at the command line. We've started at .NET, and we've gone and downloaded a .NET Core. I have a Windows machine. We made some applications. We made some libraries. We made some tests. We ran the tests. We accelerated the inner loop.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to take a break and then come back, and we're going to switch over to your computer.
That's right.
And we'll see Visual Studio, Visual Studio Code, and maybe be a little bit more productive than Notepad.
Well, I hope so.
Yeah.
I certainly hope so.
All right. This is day three of .NET Conf. Remember that we do have two tracks. I hope that you're enjoying us, but I want to remind you that there's another track right now called Learn Web and Mobile. Remember, though, that all of this is recorded. So if you don't see us live, you don't see the other channel live, you will be able to check them out recorded. We'll be right back in about 10 minutes with hour two of .NET Fundamentals.